better off. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 70 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Surovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, hello. How is everybody tonight?
I'm great. Sorry,
That was my crazy seductive voice again.
Welcome. We love it. I'm doing great. I think we all have various drinks in hand. I am currently drinking a screwdriver made with vanilla vodka. I highly recommend it if you have not tried this before because it tastes like a creamsicle.
Cool.
Yay. We're drinking because, well, we're drinking for various reasons, some of which we may get into, some of which we may not. However, the celebratory reason that we are drinking is because the Mets have Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco on their team, you guys.
That was so out of left field, but so wonderful.
I know.
It's amazing.
How unexpected.
I
love it.
This team, I mean, this organization, it's like, it's funny how, like, it's a departure from the way the Mets operated before in, like, every conceivable way, not just because of the trade itself and the impact that this trade might have, but because we had no idea this was coming, because the old regime leaked crap all the time, and this new regime is just like, oop, just gonna casually drop a Francisco Lindor trade like 15 minutes before it actually happens, because like that the time period between when Jeff Passan tweeted and when it happened was like 20 minutes.
Allison, I thought of you because he tweets the Mets are deep into talks to trade for Francisco Lindor. I'm like, it's the buzzwords.
Yeah, like
marking
I said
on your bingo cards.
You look for certain buzzwords. That's how you know it's real. Like intensifying, deep into talks. Those are the ones that mean like an hour later you're gonna get the actual trade terms.
When I saw that, I was like, wait a second. Those are the buzzwords Allison mentioned. I was like, is this really happening? And then, like you said, like 15 minutes later, like the names were being dropped. I was like, oh my god, it actually is happening.
Is this real life?
What is going on? See, my thing is, I think it was done the day before, and they just
probably
say, because there's no way it happened that quickly.
No, I'm sure it was already done. I feel like this is a very much a moment I'm recording for posterity, because it's like a where were you when sort of thing. But the story of me finding out about this trade is pretty funny, because I had, and I tweeted about this in all caps right afterwards, but I had one meeting that day, and it happened to me that the trade happened during my meeting. And so I was unaware of all of this. So like when Jeff Passan tweeted, I did not see it. I was in a meeting.
Oh no.
A virtual meeting, because I'm work from home like a lot of America. Michael was not teaching class at that moment. I think it was like in the afternoon after his
day
was
around lunchtime.
Yeah, around lunchtime. And he was either between his second to last class and his last class, or his last class was already over. But he was in the office, I guess, working, and he like like I hear the door to the office open, and he just like sprints out of the office into our kitchen, and like I work at the dining room table, which is like right next to the kitchen in like the living dining area. So he goes into the kitchen where like my Zoom camera can't see him, but I can see him, and he starts like flailing his arms at me and he's like wildly flailing his arms at me, and I'm like in this meeting, camera on, trying to pay attention, and he's just flailing his arms at me in the kitchen, and he starts dancing like wildly, like doing a happy dance in the kitchen. And so finally, like after like a certain amount of flailing, I just say, excuse me one moment. I take my headphones out and I just go, what? and he just goes, the Mets. And I was like, they signed George Springer. And he goes, it's better than that. And I was like, oh, what is it? And he goes, he traded for Francisco Lindor. And I was like, what? And so, like, the people on Zoom could, like, see me losing my mind.
Yeah, like, how do you even go back to your meeting after
that? I, like, barely could. Luckily, it was just, like, a rather informal, like, I wouldn't have taken my headphones out in the middle of a meeting if it was, like, a super, super, like, important, but it was like a one-on-one with a colleague about something, and so it was just me and this one other person, so I'm just like, hang on a minute, Amanda, just, like, take my headphones out, and I, like, came back, and I was like, sorry, the Mets just did something, like, really, really big. And she was like, oh, I don't blame you. That all my colleagues know about the Mets and my relationship with the Mets. So
I just remember Michael talking to us in our Slack and saying, should I interrupt Allison's meeting? And I think we're all like, yes.
you spurred him to do this.
Like, Mark, she's, like, so unaware. Like, this, like, the Mets universe has shifted, and Allison doesn't know.
I should have detected a disturbance in the force.
Yes. Like, this doesn't happen in, like, ever.
Ever.
Not in our decade. This last decade, at least.
I mean, so for those of you who are either living under a rock or got so excited that you blacked out and you don't remember anything, the Mets sent Ahmed Rosario and Andres Jimenez and prospects Josh Wolfe and Isaiah Green, who are, by the way, for informational purposes, the 7th and 13th best prospects, respectively, in the Mets system, according to the Amazing Avenue list. Obviously, like, various prospect lists, depending on your sources, differ, slightly, but, you know, they are in the top, like, 10 to 15 realm, but they are not in the top, I don't think anyone would argue that they're top 5 prospects. Like, they are mid-tier prospects, which in the Mets system is honestly not that great. Like, they would not, neither of these prospects would probably crack Cleveland's top 10 after being traded there. So, you know, like, prospects, but not, like, not the Mets, what you would call untouchables, although I hesitate to use that term with almost any prospect, but the guys that you really don't want to part with in the Mets system, which are not that many, but they exist, but they're not in that tier. So two of those type of prospects, and then obviously two major leaguers in Ahmed Rosario and Andres Jimenez.
I won't lie, Andres Jimenez hurts a little bit, because I've been saying, okay, trade one of them, but not both. And both went.
Well, but that means I think you have to extend him.
Well,
you
have
to. Yeah, you have to extend him at this point, or that was that's not a good move.
No.
And I was just frustrated, especially with Jimenez, because Jimenez is still a baby. I think he's, what, 21? Let me check. I always have to check in the middle of things.
He's young.
He's a baby in term of his.
But if you think about
Francisco Lindor,
exactly. If you think about it, like,
his ceiling is not Francisco Lindor.
Exactly. No. Literally, like, even if Andres Jimenez lives up to be 100% of his prospect, like, his 100th percentile outcome is still not as good as Francisco Lindor. And I say this as someone who's a big fan of Andres Jimenez. Francisco Lindor is about his 125th percentile outcome, maybe his 150th percentile outcome. So, like, it's definitely, I think that the fact that they sent both shortstops to Cleveland means that the Mets are fairly confident that they can extend Francisco Lindor. I don't think that they send both shortstops. I think that that is a signal that they feel fairly confident that they are going to extend. I mean, nothing's a guarantee in this world, obviously.
But Lindor has already said that, I believe, like, they're talking, and it's going to, he either wants to know something before or, like, during spring training or in the off season. He doesn't want to worry about it in season.
Yeah, he made very clear during the press conference that he does not negotiate contracts during the season. So if this is going to get done, it's going to get done pretty quickly, within the next few weeks.
We hope.
I think the Mets had to give up both because the Blue Jays didn't have, I think, like, Cleveland an MLB-ready shortstop to give Cleveland.
Oh, the Blue Jays.
So I think it was the only way the Mets could beat the Blue Jays' offer was by giving them both.
And honestly, like, the like Ahmed Rosario and Andres Jimenez are both going to be starting players in Cleveland now, given their current roster situation. Because I believe one of them is probably going to play second base and one of them is going to play shortstop, because right now they don't have either of those two positions filled, really. So I have a feeling they're both starting unless Cleveland makes another move or graduates a prospect. I can't claim to be familiar with their system. But I think if you look at this trade, it's pretty incredible that the Mets did not have to, they gave up major league talent, yes, but it's pretty incredible that they did not have to part with the likes of a Dominic Smith or JD Davis or Brandon Nimmo in this trade. The fact that they avoided those things is pretty incredible, and you got both. I think people are ignoring the fact that Carlos Carrasco is not a throw-in. He's not secondary piece. Not only does he fill a desperate need of the Mets, he is a bona fide number two starter. He is a very good pitcher, and they got a potentially franchise changing shortstop who may be in Queens for the next 10 years and a number two starter for a shortstop who has not quite lived up to his prospect type, but is still a major league player, a potentially budding solid shortstop, and two prospects that we don't know their potential yet. Like, I think that that is pretty incredible.
It was also amazing to follow along, like, on Twitter, because Stroman, we love our online team, he's like, oh yeah, like, let's go. I think he said, I'm so turnt right now.
He said, I'm so turnt right now. That is literally what he said.
And then he had the same reaction. He was like, Carrasco too?
Yes. And then
like,
I think
it was all of us and like just living it out in real time. And like it just added like another element to it, was seeing how excited he was and like how like even McCann was excited. And I think Carrasco today said McCann was the first one to text him. And like just seeing how excited the players are, like it's contagious. You feel it. Like as a fan, you feel it. Now the players feel it. And like you just want it to be spring.
Trevor Syndergaard May tweeted also, too, right?
So did Trevor May. And yep.
Peterson.
And Trevor May advertised the jerseys too.
Yes. Which I keep saying I will resist buying a Lindor jersey until he's extended. I will resist, but it's very hard.
I don't think they have women's sizes yet.
No, they don't.
But I think they like obviously have to sign Lindor, or I think giving up both Rosario and Jimenez was too much. If he signed to a long-term contract, it's not. But until that happens, I will be apprehensive. I'll be the contrarian.
Because Carrasco, they have him for I think another 3 years. I mean, losing
Lindor
would
absolutely
hurt. I would
have traded this haul for Carrasco alone.
Somebody said that. They said this haul was good enough for Carrasco himself, and we got freaking Francisco Lindor along with him. Yeah,
right? I mean, I think that, like, there's a difference between, like, evaluating this, like, talent, like, position agnostically, I guess is the way you could put it. Like, the talent that we gave up is such that this trade is a heist, I think, even if they do not extend Lindor. It's definitely a heist if they do. But obviously, they traded both of their players that could play shortstop. So in that aspect, if they don't extend Lindor, they I wouldn't say that it makes this trade a failure, but it creates a problem for them.
Yeah, it's not like a bad trade. It just lessens it to me.
Lessons it a little bit, yeah.
And Trevor, I love Trevor May's tweet when this when he found out it was like almost finalized. He was like, this would make it impossible for me to face him, and I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
Very, very cool with that. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah.
I love our team.
I love our online team. I know.
Our team is just going to be so much fun this year. Like the personalities are just so energetic and funny, and I hope there are some pranks that we see in the dugout. So dances. I'm really excited on all levels for this right now. And also, I apologize that my voice sounds a little weird right now. I'm a bit congested.
You're good.
Thank you.
It's funny because one of the first things that Lindor mentioned in his press conference was how excited he was about the clubhouse environment.
Yeah.
Which I think is a testament to the fact that he knows and everybody knows like how much fun our team is and how much like these guys are just really good guys and a really good group of guys to root for. And can we talk about for a hot second, speaking of good guys to root for, how the acquisition of Carlos Carrasco means that we don't have to talk about Trevor Bauer on this fucking podcast ever again.
It is my sincere hope that this is the last time I mention
Trevor Bauer on this podcast.
And then he had a whole post about like, oh, what does this trade mean for the Mets? I'm like, oh, you are so desperate. That's so adorable. But you're
mad.
Yeah. Stay with mad. The Mets cap. But I think
you overplayed your hands.
And all of the rumors this week that he's asking for like the highest possible
more than
AAV. Like, no, just no. I mean, you can take his 2018 into account. You can take his 2020 into account, which I'm hesitant to do that because it was not a full season. It's a small sample size. And then you're talking that he's going to make more than Kershaw. He's going to make more than Cole. He's going to make more than DeGrom. He's going to make more than Scherzer.
Everybody's making more than DeGrom.
Yeah, sadly. I know. But you're going to make more than Scherzer? Like, no. Because those are far superior pitchers to Trevor Bauer. So.
Where was it? I tweeted. Yeah, I'll toot my own horn. Because Carrasco said, like, he really wants to help New York because there's people in need. And he, you know, he gave back in Cleveland. And he really wants to do that in New York, too. So I was like, oh, you know, we're so lucky to have him because, you know, he's a good person. And then I was like,
he survived cancer.
Yeah. And I'm like, we're lucky to have him. I feel sorry for whatever loser team signs Bauer.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want a like an online warrior women harasser YouTube barstool adjacent bro? Or do you want a literal cancer survivor Roberto Clemente award winner? Really difficult to decide there.
And then he also said that it was so adorable. He was in full uniform for a Zoom.
Oh my God.
And he said the uniform was really important to him. I was like, oh my God.
Crying. Would literally already run through a solid brick wall for both of these dudes. Oh like, my God. I'm so excited. I'm so excited, you guys.
Also during his introductory press conference, he wore this shirt with the gate to Harvard University. We finally found out what university.
Oh, that was Lindor.
Lindor wore the Harvard shirt.
But jumping back to Lindor's press conference for a second, it was because we were in the chat trying to figure out what university it was from. I was like, oh my God, this gate looks so familiar. What is it and where is it? And I thought like immediately it was going to be like one of the New York area ones. So I was like, is it Princeton? Is it Rutgers? Is it Columbia? Because it was definitely like a colonial style gate. I'm like, what is this school? So I was very excited to find out it was Harvard. It was a great shirt.
It was a very good shirt. I liked it a lot.
And can we talk about the little boy who was so excited got Lindor?
That melted my heart. Oh, that was so good.
And then he had a Zoom with Lindor today. Like, yes. Oh my God. Like, my heart is so full. Like I think we've said, like, they're probably, and like, just like good dudes. Like, they're probably in like the top 1% of the league. Like, the whole team.
Yes, the good guy team.
Yeah. The good guy team. The Mets are the good guys, everybody. Mets are the
like,
good
guys.
You know
guys. How, like, in 86, the bad guys won? Can this be like the opposite of
that? Can this just be the good guys won? Yeah, that would be great. It's for those of you, and we'll link the videos and tweets in the show notes and in the tweets, but for those of you who haven't seen it, you should check it out. There's a video circulating around online of a little kid who was like his parents like filmed his reaction to the Lindor trade. Like basically they decorated, I guess behind his back, they decorated his room with like Lindor stuff, like Lindor to the Mets, and they like made a sign. And so they like had him open the door to his room, and he saw that, like, saw Lindor to the Mets and all this, like, Lindor Mets stuff in his room, and he started crying. It's the cutest thing I've ever seen.
With his glasses, oh my god.
Oh, like, he was so adorable. And then, like, I guess the video went viral enough that Lindor saw it, and so he Skyped with him and was like, I'm so excited that you're happy to have me on the team, and we're gonna send you some stuff. And he was showing him
his card.
Oh, it was so good.
Well, not to be a buzzkill, but that pissed me off, because, like, how does baseball not see this and realize just what baseball means to kids? And that's their next generation of fans. And it's not this corporate bullshit that they're turning the game into. Like, it's not numbers, it's people. And they make connections with their favorite players, like this little boy obviously did. And it pisses me off.
No, but it's great that the Mets are kind of shifting to that and appealing to the fans, especially with you have so many teams shedding payroll and baseball generally not marketing its stars. And this is just, the Mets are making themselves a very enjoyable team off the field. And I'm so excited to see them on the field once we get started. Let's
talk about how they have seemingly revamped to their social media too. Like, they're actually kind of fun now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, they put cookies on Cookie Carrasco's, like, scoreboard, like, what, like, the graphics on the scoreboard, like, everything. Yes. About the team is just high quality and top notch. And even, you know, when they, like, an insider was talking about the trade, and they're like, whoever made that trade for Cleveland should be embarrassed and they should be fired. I'm like, wait, there's embarrassment and it's not associated with the Mets? Like, the Mets are on the other end of that? Like,
shoes on the other foot, man.
Yeah.
And that's happened.
It's weird. You have to change your mindset now. The Mets are, like, kind of like the top tier that people want to aspire to now.
Especially since they're not showing any signs of shedding payroll.
No.
And they're one of the very few teams.
Was it Lindor? One of them mentioned Cohen in his press conference. Like, he said, with the new owner coming in, there's excitement. So that's two now. It's Lindor.
I mean, Marcus Stroman definitely said it was a factor in him accepting the qualifying offer.
And Syndergaard said it, that I think it was like, oh, we're going to have an owner that treats us, or he hopes we have an owner that treats us like players and not, oh, what was the tweet?
Not commodities.
Yeah.
And I think McCann might have mentioned it too. So it's like there's just been this whole cultural shift. And I was tweeting with somebody today because he was like, wow, yeah, you're, because I was like, you know, multiple people have mentioned World Series now. Like, I could get used to this. Like, Carrasco said it, McCann said multiple World Series. And it sounds like it's only been a couple months into the Cohen era. It could be like this forever. It's not all going to be rosy, but.
But I think a part of that is, and I've mentioned my issues with Cohen on the podcast before, and I still have those issues. But there's no denying that he is a true fan of this team and does want to invest in it and is investing in it and kind of doing what the fans want to do, but he's got the power to do it. So,
and doing it the right way too. Like,
yes.
You know, investing in, you know, a good front office and, you know, revamping the front office and getting good players. Wanting to win
and not being in it to make money. And I do think that there needs to be this kind of unwillponing of our collective psyche, because like, you have people where, like, obviously all the talk on, like, Mets internet now is about, like, a Lindor extension. What could it look like? What would the terms be? And you have people still being like, well, you know, he's gonna ask for Manny Machado money and he's not quite Manny Machado. Look at the WARs year to year. If you add up the career WARs, and it's like, literally, who cares? Like, we need to unwillpon our brains, everybody. I know that in the willpon era, this is stuff that we, like, kind of trained ourselves to have to care about, because, like, if you did a Lindor extension under the Wilpons, that would preclude them doing like anything else for years. Yes. But that is not true anymore. And we need to not care what Francisco Lindor makes. We need to not care.
But I don't, I think that mindset is something that's going to take a while to get out. Just because
we all have a lot of PTSD.
We're all guilty of it.
Just because we've been dealing with it for decades.
Well, Kelly, you might know more because you're in the comments more, but I think Chris wrote an article and he said one of the comments on his article was that they should rebuild in 2022. And he was like, they just traded for Francisco Lindor. They're not rebuilding.
I know. I actually haven't been in the comments in a bit just because I've been dealing with some life stuff, but I will go check. Wait a minute.
Who would even mention rebuilding? This isn't a rebuild.
Oh, no. We have a few commenters that have some interesting takes. That's all I will say.
What are you rebuilding?
I just, like, you, I promise you, I know you've been hurt, Mets fans. I feel you. I know you've been hurt, but you do not have to care about the owner's wallet anymore. You don't have to care. That era is over. We need to expect more, and we're getting more right now. We need to keep expecting more.
Yes.
And to keep it up too, like, there is no cap. As much as Andy Martino tweets there's a cap, there is no cap.
Yeah.
See, and
if there was, we
should care.
The
luxury tax threshold, no, who cares?
Nobody cares.
This is Cullen the other frustrating thing right now.
Cullen made another $1 billion this year, even after he sold. He basically recouped all his money, but he's fine.
I mean, and this is the frustrating thing right now, because SNY is still owned by the Wilpons. So there's going to be kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? A disparity in the information that comes out from the Mets and comes out from SNY at this point.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see. And because I think the general idea is that Cohen's going to buy the team when SNY's contract is up, which I think, and I forget what year, I want to say it's like 2026. I could be wrong. But the general chatter is he's going to buy it then when he renegotiates the TV deal. So I really want SNY to get on the same page as the team, so, and not be the state media, as we have called it in the past.
Yes. That's not changing.
But however, SNY just tweeted out about 15 minutes ago that former MLB reliever, which they spelled reliever incorrectly.
You know.
Former MLB reliever Carter Capps will join the Mets as a minor league pitching coach and coordinator.
Cool.
Okay.
Welcome.
Oh, welcome, welcome, right. Welcome.
A Park Police unit.
Police say several young men got into a fight. Brother was stabbed and Park Police was called in.
In the late 70s, tensions between Houston police and the Mexican-American community exploded. The result was a daring experiment for five young Latino police officers. They were tasked with solving Houston's toughest crimes in rebuilding trust, all while being torn between the neighborhoods that raised them and the badges they wore. My name is Cristela Alonso, and this is the story of the Chicano Squad. Subscribe to Chicano Squad from the Vox Media Podcast Network on Spotify or wherever you listen.
Well, then it also did kind of suck that Hendricks signed.
Yeah, but there are relievers out there. Brad Hand's still out there. I would really like him on the team. That would be pretty sweet. And there have been rumors to that regard, but not any. Again, none of the buzzwords have been used yet. Just rumors.
Yeah,
I have to find my bingo card. It was a good bingo card.
Buzzword bingo card.
The buzzword bingo card.
Yeah. Excellent.
Oh my god.
So the other thing that is, so Linda brought up, Kellyanne brought up state media, and then Linda brought up Andy Martino, and I do want to briefly talk about a couple of other things that Lindor said in his presser that I think deserve attention. And one of them was in a response to an Andy Martino question. I'm not using this as an excuse to roast Andy Martino, although I was slightly irritated by the question. Not the question itself, but the way he worded it, because he always has to like sneak in some condescending comment when he says things, which is so irritating. But
no, it's okay to roast Andy Martino.
Yeah, you're right, it is. Ugh. But he asked Lindor about COVID, which I think is a totally like good thing to ask and fine. But he asked it in like a really condescending way. He was kind of like, you exuded such maturity about COVID. Where did this come from for a 26-year-old? Because he asked him about it, and he kind of was trying to get him to throw his teammates under the bus, which was the other thing. Because he asked him about it in the context of his two teammates in Cleveland that broke protocol last year, Clevenger and Zach Plesac. So he asked Lindor about like, how'd you feel about that and stuff like that. But you had such a mature response. Where did that come from? And I was like, he was 26, not like 13. Like what? He's a grown ass man. But anyway.
But we've seen grown ass people just kind of ignore protocols. Like, true. I'm just going to say Alabama won the – off topic, completely not Mets related. Alabama won the National Football Championship, and I just saw this clip of, oh, my God, thousands and thousands of people squished into the seats. And it was like, oh, no, 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 no. This is going to be a super spreader event.
Yep. But so in response to that, Lindor's response to that was incredibly good and thoughtful. And like he went, I think it was, I mean, like, and I tweeted this at the time, but people can correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't sit there with a stopwatch, but I think it was his longest response, like longer than any of his responses about the trade, the organization, baseball stuff. He went on for a long time about COVID, and you could tell that he really cared about this. And he refused to take the bait. He didn't throw his teammates under the bus. He said, they're good guys, but sometimes people make mistakes, and they made a mistake. And he was like, I take this very seriously. I have a fiance and a young daughter, and I understand that if I catch it, it might not be a big deal for me, but it'll be a big deal if I give it to someone else. And he was really thoughtful in that response. And that was just a moment that stuck out to me in his press conference, because it was different than him talking about the excitement and all the baseball stuff, which is super important. But the fact that he, you know, had such a good response to this COVID thing was also really good. And the other moment that stuck out to me in his presser was he got asked a question. I think it was, I'm not sure, but I think it was from a Cleveland reporter, not from a New York reporter, because the way he asked it made it seem like it was Cleveland, because he was asking him about, like, you know, what's going to be tough about leaving Cleveland and things like that. And he brought up that, like, the stadium staff and, like, how he knew all of their names and how it was home to him. And like the reporter brought up that he thanked each and every one of them after the playoff game when Cleveland lost, and he just went through the tunnel and like thanked all the stadium staff, and he knew each of them by name. Like that stuck out to me too, because like this is clearly a guy who like cares about, you know, the people around him and not just, you know, his own stardom. Like this is not just some like diva.
Not just cares about them. He realizes like all of the work they do, and that they're really kind of his best friends, all the workers that don't necessarily, you don't see them. They work behind the scenes, taking care of the field, taking care of making sure all the bases and the diamond is ready each day, and the people that make sure the fans stay safe, the people that clean up. I mean, that's really, really great, because so many people don't do that.
Well, I think even Carrasco today said, I guess, when he was diagnosed with cancer, like Lindor was, you know, one of the first ones to like come up to him and be like, you know, a good support system for him. And he had a really good quote, and I can't find it, but yeah, he just seems just like an awesome teammate, an awesome person, and you know,
with an awesome smile.
Yeah, with an awesome Mr. smile, Mr. Smile, like, easy to root for. Yeah, Mr. Smile. And who's also very good at creating his own hype videos.
Amen. Yes. Keep the hype videos coming. We love them.
Yeah, all in on the hype videos.
But I think, I'm trying to remember I'm not going to get the exact wording right of the quote that Lindor said, but when he was talking about the stadium workers, he said something like, they all enable me to live out my dream of just playing baseball. Like, he's very cognizant of the fact that him playing does not happen in a vacuum, and he's, like, very grateful. And that just makes me so happy to have someone on my team that is like that, and not to continue to be on this soapbox, but it is a complete juxtaposition with how Trevor Bauer conducts himself. Like, Trevor Bauer is all about Trevor Bauer all the time. By the way, you guys should check out Chris McShane's tweet about, because he tweeted the gif of, like, when Bauer threw his little temper tantrum on the mound, the way Lindor did, double take in the background and just, like, stared him down. Oh, it's so perfect, because you can tell that Lindor, like, was not about that.
And apparently, Trevor Bauer, I did not watch his video, I'm just getting this secondhand. He mentioned that in his video and said Francisco Lindor kind of ripped him a new one in the clubhouse afterwards, which
good for him.
That warms my heart. I think the other thing, and this will be probably the last time I personally mention Trevor Bauer, is that if he's truly asking for, like, a really high AAV, he's going to kind of not get any team to sign him, because we have so many shedding payroll.
I think he's already there, honestly.
The Mets have signed, I think, all their starters. I would like to maybe see them sign Kluber and take a chance on him. But so many teams don't want to take on these big contracts right now just because of the pandemic and their quote-unquote lost profits. And I'm not totally buying that, but that's a different can of worms. So we will see if he's even signed by the time spring training starts.
Yeah, honestly, I think he overplayed his hand. I thought he probably thought Cohen had money. I think he was desperate for the Mets. And I think now he's up Schitt's Creek. Because who else is going to give him what he's looking for? And then now, if he has to sign for less than that, that's a huge, you know, blow to him and his.
It makes him look girl silly.
Boss agent who's changing the game. Yeah, it would be an embarrassment for both of them.
It makes them look silly. It really does.
It does. And I think I am here for it.
I know, but I think asking for that much money to begin with, even if he's not actually asking it, it's like in the public. It's on public record that he seems like it. Oh my God, I lost my train of thought. No, but that he, there we go, it came back. That he asked for that much money, I think, is already turning teams off to him, and that's already turning a lot of fans off, because, I mean, there are just so many better pitchers than he is.
Oh, and he won't shut up about it, too.
Ugh.
The day Mets Twitter turned on him was actually a beautiful day.
I know.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So good. And,
but yes, those are my final words on Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, we will never speak of he who must not be named ever again.
Yep, we don't have to, because we have a better pitcher than him on our team, and we got Francisco Lindor too, so hell yeah.
Peace out.
But, like, I think that I really hope, though, in the grand scheme of things, that, you know, and that video of that little boy we already talked about is just, like, just the perfect example and the perfect, like, you know, bastion to hold up for this, is that I just hope that the Mets, like, can change the paradigm and show that the answer to growing the game is signing good players. It's not being the Tampa Bay Rays, even though the Tampa Bay Rays do succeed and they do win. It's at what cost? It's at the cost of growing your fan base and getting kids invested in players that they grow up watching, only to watch them leave after 3 years. That's not what you want.
No.
You want to keep your franchise players. And I mean, obviously Cohen is in the best financial position to do that right now of almost any owner, if not every owner in baseball, probably every owner in baseball. But I will be the biggest critic of the Wilpons until the cows come home. They were a terrible ownership group. I hated
them.
They
were.
But one thing I will give them credit for is that I do not think that a Francisco Lindor trade would have ever happened. I'm not talking about the Mets. I'm talking about like a Cleveland-style unloading of Francisco Lindor ever would have happened under the Wilpons, because the Wilpons at least were cognizant of holding on to their franchise players. They managed to do it with David Wright. They managed to do it with Jacob DeGrom. Now I hope that Steve Cohen understands the same thing and extends Lindor and understands that this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. These players do not grow on trees. Francisco Lindor is a top 10, if not a top 5, player in baseball. You have to extend him.
I believe he's top 5 right now based on the stats.
I think it's basically like based Trout 1, Betts 2, and then it's basically like the group of like Lindor, Machado.
And Yelich, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though Yelich had a terrible year. But he's still really
good. Like, see, that's the whole thing. 2020 was such an anomalous season because it was shortened. Players were broke their normal routine. So we saw a lot of excellent players not have great seasons.
Yeah, I don't know how much you can really judge. Even Lindor did not have a typical Lindor season last year. But then Carrasco really had like the best year like ever. So it's hard to know what's real and what isn't.
It's difficult to judge the season because it was 60 games.
I'm sorry. We said we weren't going to bring him up.
Jeez, Linda.
He wants you to base his whole like career on 11 games.
Yeah, he sure does. But like, I still have trouble like absorbing all this and having it sink in, because this is something that hasn't happened since the Piazza trade. This is something that like, you know, fans of our generation, like the Piazza trade was the big moment. I feel like that put the Mets back on the map again. Yeah. And like, this is that. For this new generation of fans, for that little kid and his entire generation, this is that moment.
No joke, that after the trade, the next night, I woke up, I want to say 4 a.m. I sat up straight up in bed and went, Lindor.
Literally, though, it's the thing that makes you like,
wait, that was real.
I didn't dream that, right? I didn't dream that. That really happened.
And then, you know, we're all on Twitter, obviously. And, you know, seeing fans of other teams being like, oh, I wish I were a Met fan, or can I join you? Or like, that excitement was contagious. Like, you know, every team could do that. And they just choose not to. And you're just alienating your own fan base.
Meanwhile, like, the Yankees are a poverty franchise and can't even meet DJ LeMahieu's asking price. It's so delicious.
If he leaves, I'm going to laugh so hard.
Blue Jays
or the Dodgers, I think.
Yep. It's so delicious. It's, like, so good. I mean,
I'm going to laugh.
The Mets still have, like, a couple things that I'd like to see them do to finish things out. I mean, I'd love to see George Springer. That'd be great.
Yes.
But, like, even as things stand right now, if the Mets did nothing else, they are a top 3 team in baseball. Like, on paper, obviously, you got to play the games, and who knows what will happen. But who in the National League besides the Dodgers is like very clearly better than the Mets? It's basically the Dodgers, the Mets, and the Padres are like the 3 good teams in the National League. And the Braves.
Yeah, I was going to say the Braves, yeah.
The Braves are good. Like, who beyond that is trying?
The Nationals, kinda.
Yeah, the Nationals are being weird.
They are being weird.
They're being weird. I feel uncomfortable. I'm like, I don't know what the Nationals are doing, and it makes me feel weird.
I don't think anybody knows what they're doing at this point.
I think they're trying to compete but being cheap about it.
Yes.
Yeah, they're kind of doing like a Mets offseason a little bit. Like,
oh yeah, they're Wilpon Mets offseason. Absolutely.
Yep. A little bit. Yeah.
Like, I think it was Thomas who was like, do they realize Schwarber is bad now? And then they tweeted like Natitude, like, oh, these are our bombers. And it's like, yeah, but we have Francisco Lindor, bitch.
Yeah, it's like, really?
But good luck with your attitude.
The entire NL Central is just like a garbage fire at this point.
They're not even trying.
None of them are trying. I mean, the Cubs traded Darvish and they unloaded all their payroll. They didn't even want to trade Bryant. Yeah, they want to trade Bryant.
Maybe Contreras now, or they wanted to trade him to the Marlins.
Something about Contreras, and they obviously non-tendered Schwarber, who ended up signing a contract for probably more than he was going to get in arbitration anyway.
Somebody pointed out the whole like Contreras to the Marlins situation is hysterical because the Cubs want to get rid of him because they don't want to pay him, and the Marlins want him, but they don't want to pay him either.
And it again rounds back to so many teams just crying poor because of the pandemic.
And the Phillies still cannot like have yet to retain JT Realmuto, who's like
their franchise player kind of right now. And I don't think they're going to.
I don't think so either.
They keep saying they're trying, but who knows? I mean, if they were trying that hard, it would have happened already. Because JT Realmuto, it's one of those situations. Because like Francisco Lindor is the same. I was about to call Cleveland by their former team name. I need to stop doing that. If Cleveland wanted to keep him long term, they could have easily done it because they knew his number and he like clearly wanted to stay in Cleveland. I think he was fully prepared just to be Cleveland's franchise player. Like, he was fully prepared for that, and Cleveland just did not want to meet his asking price, or, like, probably even come close, because it's clear, based on his press conference and the way he's been talking about it, that he was like, I wanted to stay, and they just didn't want to pay me, basically. Yeah. So it's kind of like, at Mets, like, if you just pay him, he will stay here.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, and also, I know we've mentioned this before with the Phillies, too, you know, Bryce Harper has been very vocal about him wanting them to keep Realmuto. So it's like, you know, how long before he gets disenfranchised with the Phillies?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot sooner than we think.
I mean, like, they were already really bad last year. Yeah. Bryce Harper.
And I won't lie, I'm enjoying that so much.
Yeah, there's a level of, you know, satisfaction in that, not gonna lie. But yeah, I mean, like, JT Realmuto has also made it, kind of like Lindor with Cleveland, Realmuto has made it abundantly clear that he wants to stay in Philadelphia. I think that would be his first choice, but he's not gonna just stay there for nothing.
Nor should he seem
inclined to pay him, so we'll see what happens there, but...
I remembered when we did the podcast with Brian and we were talking about who our choices were, you know, who we wanted them to sign. And I remember he said, you know, he preferred the Mets to sign Realmuto because he was like, how often does the best player at his position become available? Like, not often. So you might as well take advantage when that happens. And the Mets did that with Lindor.
Yeah, the Mets did that with an entirely different position. Yeah, another premium position. I mean, I would say that catcher is a premium position, but shortstop is also a premium position. So, and they have the best shortstop in the game.
Yeah. So how, like, when was the last time the Mets had, like, DeGrom, obviously, duh. But that they actually, like, went for the best player at their position? Like, was it Beltran?
I guess, yeah, Piazza? That's probably, I mean, that's the last time they made a free agent signing of, like, a player, because, like, again, this is the other thing that makes this, like, once in a lifetime is that, like, you are acquiring a player at his peak. Like, Lindor is literally at his peak right now, and you are acquiring him at that time. I think that the last time that they did something like that was Carlos Beltran. They signed him when he was, you know, really good still. So I think that that's probably the last time. And then, like, obviously before that, Mike Piazza.
But was Beltran considered, like, the best at his position, though?
At center field at that time?
Yeah.
Probably. Like, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
No, I can't either.
Because, like, Andrew Jones was already,
Was on the decline at that time.
At that point, yeah, on the way down.
Torii Hunter was...
He was good, but I don't think he was as good as Carlos Beltran during that period.
Let's see.
I think Carlos Beltran was the best center fielder in the game at that point.
Let's see. Hang on.
I can't really think of anybody else.
Okay, this doesn't have by position, which is annoying. I'm looking things up on Fangraphs like, and BRef.
I mean, not to be snotty, but it's New York. You should have the premier players.
Yes. You should.
You shouldn't be crying poor because you're in the biggest media market in the country.
Exactly. And the Mets are finally operating like a New York team. New York should operate.
I mean, no. And
New York
no
sports
offense.
Has been kind of embarrassing for quite a long time right now.
Yeah, seriously.
And I mean, no offense to the rest of the teams across the country, but it is the fact that New York and the New York metropolitan area are so densely populated, and they're the most like densely populated in the country. So yes, we're going to have a big media market. Yes, we're going to have a lot of money around here. So, and it should be spent.
Well, and also it's, you know, you look at, I don't know, maybe even the past 20 years, it's all LA, it's all Chicago, it's all Boston. Like, those are all huge markets, and they all got their championships, so why haven't we gotten ours?
Yeah.
Like, they acted like big market teams and all won championships, so why can't New York do the same? And
well,
it's embarrassing.
Because
our
previous owners were tied up with a Ponzi scheme.
It's not just baseball, it's football, it's basketball, it's, you know, it's hockey. You know, why are New York sports so embarrassing?
I was going to say, I don't know because I don't follow those sports. I like keep my eye on the New York Red Bulls right now just because there was, actually, I don't think that player is even on the team right now, but there was like a really cool player that I liked and I've met.
I did draft somebody from Fordham a couple of years ago, but I don't know if he's on the team.
But he was really cool. And I knew his family because I like taught his daughter for a little bit, and it was just awesome.
Yep.
Sorry, that's my little anecdote of knowing a player
Red Bulls.
On the
Red.
Yep,
the
Red Bulls. Bulls.
Also, Bulls. The Red. This is gonna
have
like
they
kind
won?
Of reveal.
Have they won like a championship or anything recently?
No.
Oh, no, okay. So I could join the rest of us.
But I was going to say, I think I just have a special fondness for them because, and this is going to totally tell where I live, their training complex is fairly near me, as are the Jets complex. So
Steer clear.
I was going to say, Allison, you and Michael should come up because Michael would enjoy that.
Yeah.
And you can visit me. Yay! Because I miss you guys.
A suffering Jets fan, he would enjoy. The training facility, however. But yeah, it's exciting. Like, this is a new era of Mets baseball, and I can't wait to see it play out on the field. I'm very excited about it.
The players are too, which is it's a fun time to be a fan finally. Not embarrassing.
I mean, and especially since hopefully spring training will start on time, whether it's with or without fans. Has yet to be seen. I think we're all leaning toward the idea of there are going to be at least some fans just because they're going to try and recoup some profits and some money. So,
well, Citi Field is becoming a vaccination site. So,
which is really cool. Which
that is really a really cool thing.
Yep. So that's good. Hopefully we get some shots and some arms and then we can get some fans in the stands. I mean, Rob Manfred already did come out and say to expect a 162 game season, but of course he's going to say that. He's Rob Manfred. And it is in his best interest to say that. But, you know.
Well, for once, I hope that man is right, even though I despise him.
Yes. My sentiments exactly.
You know, I don't know if I said this on the podcast or not, because once again, I've had wine. So I might be repeating myself, but I think he desperately wants a legitimate World Series winner. Because if you look back at the last, you know, 5 years, 2017, there's a question about the winner. 2018, there's a question about the winner. 2019, okay, fine, we'll give the Nationals whatever. But then
they were, 2020, they were named in that possible suit where teams were cheating. So nothing ever came of it, but there's still that little shadow of doubt.
So he's the head of a sport where since 2017, every World Series winner might not be legitimate. So I think he desperately wants a full season where the questions can stop. But
and it would be some good PR for him.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure.
Even though he doesn't deserve it.
No. And even though his last World Series also turned into a super spreader event, but
that's very cool.
That's it. Yeah.
Yay.
So speaking of like wider baseball things, I do just want to bring up like one brief topic. We knew this was going to be a very Mets heavy podcast given, and we recorded this on a Tuesday that we wouldn't normally be recording, but we felt like we had to, because obviously we want to share our excitement with you all. But there is like one baseball thing I did want to bring up briefly, which is that, legendary Dodger Tommy Lasorda recently passed away. And that, caused, you know, some discourse. So obviously Dodgers fans, you know, feel some kind of way about Tommy Lasorda. He's a big time Dodgers legend, like, you know, huge franchise icon, for those fans. The way, you know, I kind of feel like a lot of them probably feel the same way that the Mets fans felt when Tom Seaver passed away. But he leaves behind a rather complicated legacy, and I feel like that those things deserve to be discussed. He, for example, refused to admit that his son was gay, and his son eventually died of AIDS complications. And like, that is something that no one talks about when it comes to Tommy Lasorda. And he's also, you know, has a history of making, you know, somewhat racist remarks, not somewhat, straight up racist remarks. For example, he told a Korean fan to go back where he came from. Like, basically, he asked a Korean fan, like, where are you from? And the fan said Korea, and he was like, why don't you go back where you came from? So, you know, that sort of old white man racism that we're all too, unfortunately, accustomed to. So, I don't know. It's part of the wider theme that we've discussed on this podcast before, that just because someone is a franchise legend doesn't mean they get a free pass for this sort of behavior. And I think that there was a recent New York Times piece by James Wagner that elicited a lot of discourse, because on one hand, people thought it was really thoughtful, because like, it did mention the whole like legacy he leaves behind of like refusing to admit his son was gay, but it was a rather, you know, like painting over it a little bit and giving him the sort of benefit of the doubt of like, this is just what those times were like during the AIDS scare of the 80s, and like, this is just how things were, and everyone was afraid and all this stuff. And it's just kind of like, well, like, I don't know if you can give everybody that pass just because times were different.
Yeah.
He was his son. I mean,
it's his son, but we still see it today.
Yeah.
Some of the highest demographics of homeless people are children and teenagers that have been disowned by their parents for being gay, for being lesbian or trans and bisexual. And we have seen high profile people kind of support those causes, although they are few and far in between. Like, the first person that comes to mind is Bea Arthur of the Golden Girls. She was a huge supporter of trans shelters and donate a lot of money throughout her career. But it's still a big issue today, because we don't see any gay or bisexual or transgender players in the major leagues right now.
Well, and how many players have been suspended for using the F word in their Twitter accounts?
Yes. And I think there have only been one or two players in the league that, and I think one was forced to be closeted. Wait, now I gotta look this up. Because he was very open about it, when he was in there. However, he was not allowed to like come out publicly, and it was Glenn Burke. That was who it was. Glenn Burke, who played for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the Oakland A's. Let's see, and he did that in 1976 to 79. Who was the coach then? I am curious. Wait a minute. If it was Tommy Lasorda, I can't remember. And actually, going back to Tommy Lasorda, he actually has one of my favorite baseball quotes, which I'll get to that in a second. But he coached for the Dodgers from 1973 to 1976. So he was there for 1 year, overlapping with Glenn Burke. So who knows how he reacted to that. But going off of that for a second, kind of going to a more positive thing, and he was a very controversial character, so there was good and there was bad. And this quote that I like is, no matter how good you are, you're going to lose 1/3 of your games, so 54 games. No matter how bad you are, you're going to win 1/3 of your games, again, 54 games. It's the other third that makes the difference. And I really like that quote, just because it kind of gives that balance to baseball where, yes, you're going to lose some and you're going to win some, but the best teams are going to figure out how to win that other third, and that's what makes championships and playoff teams, and then teams that are kind of tanking and not doing as well, which teams aren't doing as well, that aren't doing as well, excuse me. It's more due to the fact that they're trying to tank rather than they're just bad teams. And they're not trying to lose. They just can't collect those wins. So he obviously is a very controversial character, but I do like that quote.
Yeah. So I just figured it was worth acknowledging on the podcast that these aspects of him are too often whitewashed, and we need to.
Yes.
And I think in the era of, like, right now with Hall of Fame voting and everything, and talking about guys like Curt Schilling and, you know, Barry Bonds and the like. Exactly. Talking about those figures, we need to remind ourselves that just because these figures may be products of another time, we can change the narrative now, and we can change how we look back at their legacies now. And we don't have to, just because they played in a different time or like everybody was doing XYZ thing, we have the power to change how we evaluate these things, and we can take the Hall of Fame and actually use the character clause. And you know, not everyone deserves to be held up the way that they don't deserve the pedestals that they're being put on always.
No.
You know, just because that they were star athletes or coaches or whatever. So it's something that's worth thinking about, you know, that these guys aren't perfect and sometimes they're far from it. So, but speaking of Hall of Fame voting, given the recent, you know, the way that Hall of Fame voters have glossed over domestic violence, and continue to allow abusers into the Hall of Fame and vote for them and say they feel bad about it, but then just do it anyway. We decided that we wanted to, do something about it because we were all feeling, you know, this like consternation about it. So we decided to put that consternation to good use. And we started a fundraiser. So we're doing another, you know, a kind of mini Dollars for Dingers, but not based on any, you know, home run amount. It's just anybody who donates money to the National Domestic Violence Hotline or a local domestic violence charity or women's shelter, what have you, of your choice. Anybody who donates in any amount between now and February 23rd, we will enter you into a prize drawing to win some Mets memorabilia that we have lined up for you guys. And on the podcast on February 23rd, we will do another live podcast and we will have a drawing and it'll be super fun. So if you haven't donated already, please do so. Any amount helps. We really want to raise some money and we already have, I think I have the tracker up right now. Let me just open that real quick. We have already raised $567. Since we first put out the call on Twitter and on our last show. So,
and then some things happened that my soul might have gotten lost and buried.
Then Mets fans got distracted by a certain trade that occurred. But our fundraiser is still happening between now and February 23rd, so it's not too late. Any amount helps. We already have $567 and that was within like days of announcing this. So you guys are freaking awesome. Thank you guys so much. Let's keep it going. Keep raising that money for victims of domestic violence. These charities need it more than ever. Domestic violence is such an acute problem during this pandemic. So it's not just the Hall of Fame voting that spurs this on. It's, you know, domestic violence victims who are already in such precarious situations are now even more trapped in these situations because of the pandemic. And it's, you know, it's exacerbating an already really terrible problem. So these charities really need your help. Please, if you
can. And just because I know, I'm just going to say, I'm actually donating to the Jersey Battered Women's Services. That's primarily based out of Morris County, New Jersey, and they have a lot of different programs, the 24-hour hotline, safe home, transitional living, legal advocacy, crisis response teams, and that's just their, like, safety ones. They also have support, counseling services, child and adolescent services. So many of these programs have been suspended due to the pandemic. So any donations right now are going to go a long way. So, even if you can volunteer your time, see if you can volunteer virtually. I'm going to try and find out if I can do like some virtual story times for the kids. Just because this whole pandemic has been very difficult on children, across all demographics, just because so many children are learning virtually. But especially those in at-risk families need a little care and need to see that people do want to support them and help them and donate, learn how you can help, go to websites of local shelters, go to the National Domestic Hotline to find out more. And that's my little spiel.
Yes.
Just because I was like just looking at the JWBS and I was like, oh my God, these shelters just do so much.
Yeah.
And in particular, that one is just so close to my home. So it's something that I would love to just help beyond donating money. So.
Amen.
Amen. And you can just volunteering your time, making a difference in even one person's life makes such a difference.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Even changing one life is worth it.
Yes.
So any amount of money or time that you can give, and if you donate your time, we'll still enter you into the raffle. Just give any sort of like, and you can by the way, send like proof of your donation, either in the form of your time or your money. I'm sure that they'll email you or like give you a physical receipt of some kind. So just send a screen cap of that you can DM us on Twitter at a pod of their own, or you can send it to our email address, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. So just send us proof of your donation and then we'll enter you into the giveaway, which we will do the drawing for on February 23rd. So that's how you can get entered into the prize drawing. Woo-hoo. Yay. So we will end the show like we do every week with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about what is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. I think we're all pretty happy about baseball this week.
but we already talked about baseball
at the top of the show. But let's see. So Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I do have to say just one thing, like Dave Capobianco like screenshotted all our reactions like as the trade was going down. And it was all like, oh my god, is this happening? Oh my god. And then there's me sneaking in there with, is my man safe?
Linda's still thinking about JD.
Totally on brand. Like, please tell me JD isn't involved. So, yeah, like, when he showed the screenshots, like, I just got a little laugh about that. Like, of course, like, that was my first reaction. But my walk-off win is actually hockey is starting this week. Because on New Year's, you know, during the holiday season, you had your Christmas movies and you were distracted in your holiday schedule. But on New Year's, that's like hockey's day. Like, they have the Winter Classic outside. It's like their big thing. Like, every sport has their day. Like, baseball is 4th of July. Basketball is Christmas. Football is Thanksgiving. And, like, New Year's is hockey's. And on New Year's, there was nothing. And that was when I really felt it. Like, I really, really missed it. And it's finally starting again this week. And I also should say Henrik Lundqvist needed open heart surgery, and he tweeted that it went well. And he shared a little drawing of his daughter that his daughter did of him. And it was so sweet. And I had a picture of his heart. And oh, my God. So, you know what? That's actually my walk-off win, is Henrik Lundqvist is doing well. And hopefully will continue to do well, because that was really scary and out of the blue. And, you know, he's done so much. Like, you know, he was a hockey god. But he did so much for the city of New York and away from the ice. He was so heavily involved in charity and, you know, he's just a really good guy. And, you know, that came out of the blue. And it seemed like he was so excited to, you know, get a fresh start in Washington, D.C. And that kind of got taken away from him. But, you know, his health is more important. And it seems like at least he's on the road to recovery. So, Godspeed, Henrik. We still love you. And best wishes, and, you know, feel better and get well soon. And yeah, I just hope that, you know, everything's good and it stays good. But for now, it seems like it is. And everybody should see the little drawing his daughter did, because it's so cute.
Good guy goalie. Yes.
Good guy goalie.
Goalkeeper, yeah. I'm sorry. Goalie's like more of a soccer term, football yes. term. The real football.
Keeper.
Not catch the pigskin.
Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, it's not as good as Linda's, but I just made level 40 in Pokemon Go today.
Hell yeah! That's a huge achievement. I have yet to do that, so.
I was so excited about that. Let's see, do I have another one? I think I was like, well, I'm excited about Lindor.
I think that's a given.
Yeah. No, I won't lie. I just, it's been a couple rough weeks, just because one of my jobs had to be shut down, for the week, just because one of my coworkers had COVID, and he straight had it. We know he had it. So he's better though, thankfully. And we are back to work, which is great. Yeah, and those are my walk-off wins. Level 40, Lindor, and getting back to work.
That's great.
Because yes. I miss work.
I hope your coworker's feeling better.
He is. If you don't know me, I really love my jobs as a children librarian. I work at two different libraries right now. But I love my jobs. I just do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm very fortunate to be able to say that, because I know a lot of people don't. So
yeah,
those are my walk-off wins.
So my walk-off win is going to kind of start sad, but then get happy. So I feel like it's been a surreal like week and a half, because I live in Washington, D.C., for those of you who don't know, and I live about a mile from the Capitol building. And it's hard, like, I know that this isn't a politics podcast or anything, but we talk about how sports don't happen in a bubble and they're affected by the bigger world around us. And we had a huge major event happen last week. And so right down the road from where I live, literally, it was terrifying. So we had, you know, a group of terrorists storm the Capitol building right near where I live. And it was pretty scary. And it was a really sad day just for the country and for our city, for a place that doesn't have proper representation in Congress. And yet our citizens were terrorized by a group of insurrectionists. It's kind of messed up. But what turns it into a walk-off win is that I was really, really touched by the amount of support I got. Like, just the amount of, like, text messages out of nowhere from people I hadn't talked to in a while, some close friends, family, like, all across the spectrum of people I know, just being like, hey, are you safe? Are you okay? And so just knowing that, like, when shit gets real, like, I have people that have my back, is like pretty cool. And it made me appreciate the company I've chosen to keep and the people that I have in my life. And I'm just really grateful. So thank you to everyone who was looking out for mine and Michael's safety. We are so grateful to you. We are safe. And we will remain so. We live in a secured building, luckily. So, like, we live in an apartment, like, building. So we have, like, a front desk that has security, and, you know, you have to, like, have a key to even get in the building in the first place. So we feel pretty safe, but obviously, you know, DC is not out of the woods yet. The inauguration still has to happen, and there's threats of more violence. So I'm just really, really hoping that that doesn't come to pass and we never have to see anything like that ever again, because, like, no matter, like, what you feel about the election results one way or the other, like, I think it's safe to say that that's not the answer.
What really startled me about that was you had in the line of succession number two, the vice president, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate pro tem all in there. And I'm just very thankful that nothing happened to all of them, because that just could have set a huge succession issue, even with a week and a half left. And also, I was just very frustrated to see the Capitol building itself treated so poorly, just because it's such, and I think that's like so low in the scheme of things. I'm just glad that, very few people were hurt. It's very frustrating to see that a Capitol police officer, was beaten to death, from the people that supposedly respect the cops.
Yeah. Mm. So much for Blue Lives Matter, right?
Yeah.
Mm. But even just the historic nature of the Capitol, whether you feel good or bad about it, and I feel, of course, there's both in there, but it's the building that one of the buildings that represents our democracy, and to see it come under attack like that was just horrifying and shocking. And I'm still not quite, it hasn't sunk in totally to me that there are people that claim to be patriots and would do that.
Well, what killed me was 20 years ago, everyone died on Flight 93. To protect the Capitol.
Yep.
And 20 years later, terrorists walked in the front door. And, you know, they died protecting the Capitol from terrorists. And now here we are 20 years later with terrorists just walking in the front door.
Yep.
And I think that's what broke me. Like, and these are homegrown terrorists. These are Americans.
These are Americans.
these are supposed to be, you know, our fellow, you know, the United States of America. And it just, it's not. And I don't know how it's going to be going forward. But, you know, this was walk-off wins, so I'm going to add another one. Eugene Goodman, who basically saved the entire Senate, that one Capitol officer.
Yes.
Who stared down the mob and such grace under pressure to even realize how vulnerable everybody was. And it was seconds. It was, he had just seconds to act. The mob was there.
Yep.
And he found a way to get them away, and it gave the Senate time to get away. Yep. So one man basically saved our democracy, which is kind of scary that our democracy is that fragile.
Yes.
But thank God for Officer Eugene Goodman, who everybody should know his name.
Yep. Yes. Absolutely. And there were two women and two staffers, and I'm sorry, I don't know their names. I'm going to look them up right now. But they pulled the boxes with the certified votes out of the Senate chambers before the terrorists could get to them, which there are multiple copies of those certified votes, but still...
They had the presence of mind.
They had the presence of mind to grab them. Before anything bad could happen to them. And let me see if I can find their names, because it was two women, and they were just amazing.
And that's why, I mean, like, I know it's super corny, but if you think about the, like, the Mr. Rogers quote, like, always look for the helpers. Like, even on our democracy's, like, darkest day, there's always people that are trying to help, which is something to be inspired about. But I think that, like, thinking about, like, our generation, like, kind of tying it back to sports and baseball for a second, but thinking about, like, our generation remembers, like, 9/11 and the Mike Piazza home run after 9/11 and what that did, and just kind of thinking about, like, I don't know, it's a little bit of a, like, this is how you grew up thinking about, like, oh, this threat from the outside was able to unite the country. But what happens when the threat is us?
Yeah.
And I, seeing so much of the "this is not who we are" rhetoric troubles me, because that is a failure to reckon with the fact that this is who we are.
Yes.
This is a part of who we are. This is our country. And again, bringing it back to sports, like Marcus Stroman and others did so well to articulate the fact that this is white supremacy in action. This is what it looks like. And we cannot shy away from that. We cannot pretend that this is not who we are. And I hope that people realize that. And I hope that people realize that when Dominic Smith cries in response to, you know, the continued slaughter of black bodies, that black people and people of color have been telling us that this is who we are for a long time now. And I hope that people start to listen. I hope that now that they have seen this, that they start to listen, because our democracy depends on it.
Yeah.
Our democracy very much depends on it. And it's in a very precarious state. And I think that this showed just how fragile it really is. So
if it doesn't bother them that a Confederate flag flew.
Oh, my God. And that didn't even happen during the Civil War.
This Confederate flag never made it to the Capitol.
Not only until... a Confederate flag, a flag with a swastika as well.
Yep.
And lots of people with shirts referring to the Holocaust and saying that 6 million people wasn't enough.
It was horrifying.
Yeah. It was just hate. Gathered in one area. Like,
heinous.
If that doesn't disturb you, then I don't know. There's no hope for you then.
No.
This is white supremacy and evil at work, and I really hope that people take this seriously and realize how bad this is. And so I know this is walk-off wins, but again, I am super grateful for the people in my life who are looking out for us and the helpers inside the Capitol, Eugene Goodman, those two women. There are always good people to look to, and like people and athletes who are continuing to speak truth to power. The WNBA does not get enough credit.
Yes, they were one of the first.
For how they have continued to live social justice through their everyday actions. And we need to pay attention. And the other leagues need to emulate how they've been acting. And get Kelly Loeffler out of the fucking
sport. Oh, God.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that, like, you know, sports emulate life, and we shouldn't shy away from talking about, you know, a literal armed insurrection that occurred. And we can hope that sports do their part to heal us and also to move us forward.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just to go back for a minute, one of the women who rescued the certified votes was a 19-year-old. 19 years old. Her name is Virginia Brown. I can't find the other name just yet. I will find it and we'll put it in the show notes just because I think it is that important.
The heroes deserve their names out there.
Yes.
Yeah, not the
jerk asses.
Yahoos.
And not the fake martyrs who died for a Trumpian cause. Ugh. We're not gonna mention their names. They don't deserve to be named.
But you know what?
Heroes who died.
But I think it is a testament that so many are now on no-fly lists. A lot of people are losing their jobs. A lot of people are getting arrested. Even though it wasn't immediate, it is still ongoing and happening.
I saw a tweet today that was like, boomers told us not to post pictures, to untag ourselves from pictures where we were drinking at college parties and they're live streaming themselves storming the Capitol.
Yep.
Like, how literally stupid.
And proudly posing for pictures.
Yeah. Oh, or the one guy who wore his work ID. Like,
oh my God.
What an idiot.
Oh my God, they're just so dumb.
Anyway. So yeah. Sorry to end the show on a somewhat mixed note, but I think it needed to be mentioned because we can't just pretend these things aren't happening.
No.
But baseball, we signed Francisco Lindor.
That
saved the week.
It really freaking did. I kept telling people because it happened like 36 hours after the.
Yeah.
So I kept telling people that like this was way too many emotions for me to feel in such a short period of time. I was like, I'm gonna shut down. I'm very overwhelmed. But anyway,
I got to work on Friday, and I was like, it was my birthday last week.
I didn't even remember.
I was like, it was honestly my birthday on Monday, and I don't remember it.
I know, and I texted you the day after. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Oh my God. And then wait, what was the tweet? Here's another tweet. Oh, the Mets fans get a few minutes of respite and pure unadulterated joy today. Thank Dickie. Yep. Welcome Lindor and Carrasco.
They saved us. They saved our week, really.
They really did.
And I think that was, again, intentional. The team saw all that was going on, backed off, because imagine if they had released that news on, I think it was Tuesday.
They wouldn't know it was Wednesday.
Yes. And Wednesday it came off so much better just because everybody's like freaking out. And it's just this moment of, hey, I can pull away from this and enjoy something for a second.
Yep.
Well, even, you know, somebody asked Sandy and what he thought of everything. He was like, I was a Marine. Like, I defend democracy. He was like, it was awful.
No, not only was it awful, he's like, I've been not happy with the decisions over like the past couple years. I was like, oh my God, Sandy, I love you.
Yeah, so, you know, Sandy's probably directly involved in the trade. So, of course, he knows we can't dump this news when our democracy's at stake.
So I
have a feeling like they were well into talks on Wednesday or Tuesday and then just didn't say anything until Thursday.
Yep, that's probably true. But yeah, what a roller coaster of a week.
Yeah.
And that's why we had to record a podcast on a week we wouldn't normally record. But we're very excited for our schedule coming up because we have some very exciting things in store for you guys. I already mentioned that on February 23rd, we're going to have our prize drawing. Later this month, we're going to have Maggie back on for our next show that we're recording in 2 weeks. So Maggie's going to be, it's kind of going to be like a Linda, Kellyanne, Maggie, like a mix of everyone for a while. We're just going to like trade off. Kellyanne does some shows. Maggie does some shows. So you never know what you're going to get. It's going to be great. So we're going to have Maggie on in a couple weeks. And then we have a very special guest planned for you guys. Oh my God,
that was my other walk-off
win. That was your other walk-off win. We've lined up a very special guest on February 9th. We're not going to tell you guys quite yet who it is, but we're very excited about it. So stay tuned.
For that.
It's going to be an exciting few weeks of podcasting that'll take us up till Pitchers and Catchers. So we can't wait to share that all with you. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com. We've got coverage of every angle of the Lindor Carrasco trade that you can possibly want. Updated look at the rotation, updated look at the infield, the prospects that we sent over, and what and our minor league team's evaluation of those guys, all sorts. We've written like many articles about it at this point. What a possible Lindor extension might look like. All your coverage over at AmazingAvenue.com. So you can read about all of that and more. Join Kellyanne in the comments section. She loves to say hi to all of our readers.
Yes, I do. There's pun threads all the time.
Yes,
so many
there's
pun
always
threads.
Puns. There's always puns on Amazing Avenue. And you can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Amazing Avenue. Engage with us on all the social medias. You can follow this show on Twitter, at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow Linda and I on Twitter. Linda is at
Linda Cerevich.
And I am at Petite PhD. You can join Kellyanne in the Amazing Avenue comments, as I mentioned.
And I was going to say, I might come back to Twitter after next Wednesday. We'll see.
Keep us on the edge of our seats here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe Kellyanne will come back to Twitter. Who knows?
I was going to say, next Wednesday we know is a very special day. We'll see.
You should also subscribe to Amazing Avenue Audio on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show. It really helps people find it. Plus, we have an entire suite of pods for you guys from the crew at Amazing Avenue that you should enjoy all of them. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. Francisco Lindor is on the Mets, so let's fucking go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. We'll see you guys in a couple.